This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
1 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
This is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. You know, it's a funny thing. I get a lot of feedback from you, the audience, about, the questions that you usually address are important in your life. What do these men have in common? Hey, before I get started, one comment about Majid Ali's program that we just heard. The quality of that program keeps getting better and better and better and better. I love his comfort with the microphone and his comfort with his guests as well. And I hope if you've all been noticing that, it's always good to send feedback to WBAI. I think Majid Ali is giving us some very good information and presenting it in a much more dynamic way. I like his learning. And you can tell he wasn't a radio guy at the very beginning, but a good physician. It's kind of coming around. I like that. Also, at 2 o'clock, the Arts Magazine comes around with Mark Lyoser, I believe. What do the following men have in common? Get ready for this. James Bond, Gandhi, Tony Soprano, Oliver North, Frank Sinatra, Jesus Christ, and Saddam Hussein. Shall I put them together again? James Bond, Gandhi, Oliver North, Tony Soprano, Frank Sinatra, Jesus Christ, Saddam Hussein. What do they all have in common? They all have an E in there. No, what do they have in common? What is the thing that you think of when you think of them? Well, it's kind of obvious. One thing is they all had power. Power, yes, everyone. Saddam Hussein had his power. Still does to many people. Jesus Christ, certainly powerful. Frank Sinatra, certainly, absolutely. Ran the music world in many ways. He was a king of music and the king of the music world. Oliver North, funny way, his own power, right? Tony Soprano, of course, the character on television. Gandhi, incredible power. And James Bond is perceived as having, even though he's a fictional character, right? It's also perceived, but I think they're all fictional characters in a way. What we make out of each one of them, how we make it up in our mind. But why are they so attractive? What else do these men have in common? The thing that all these men also have in common is I don't think any one of them ever said, I'm sorry. Sorry meaning a personal apology for my behavior. Now, you would think of, you can't possibly lump them together because... But you don't think of Gandhi as saying, I'm sorry I let the steamrollers run over my people, so in my protest against salt tax. You don't think of a personal apology. You don't think of Jesus Christ saying, I really regret not making, half as many loaves and twice as many fishes because it wasn't such a good balance. I regret it. Personal remorse. Nope. Jesus felt he was led by God. Gandhi felt he had a bigger message. But all the others, Tony Soprano, Oliver North, Frank Sinatra, I can't picture them saying, I'm sorry. Now, what is important about men saying, I'm sorry? The category ends here. Now I'm going to take Gandhi and Jesus out of the category because I don't know too much about them. But what does James Bond, Tony Soprano, Oliver North, Frank Sinatra, Saddam Hussein, maybe Frank Sinatra, I'm not sure, but it seemed, and Saddam Hussein have in common? Well, they were all men in power, and they were all men who exercised their power in a non-remorseful way. A couple of recent articles and books about Frank Sinatra kind of indicated that there were some malicious parts to him where he did things that you wouldn't expect. Soprano kind of things, you know what I mean? Today I want to do a program about men who are destructive and dangerous. And it's not so much that I want to do the program about the men who are destructive and dangerous, but I want to do a program about the women who fall in love with men who are destructive and dangerous. Who loves a person who is destructive and dangerous? And what's so attractive about them? What's so attractive about the person who's this aloof, charming, powerful? Well, it could be any form of destructive or dangerous. There are people who fall in love with serial killers. One of the famous serial killers, which one was it? Not Bundy. No, not Manson. And not Dahmer, although all of those, but there was one that was the most famous for he getting letters of people wanting to marry him. See, they would fall in love with, and why do people who are in prison, sometimes if they're convicted killers, do they get letters from women who fall in love with them? Some people think the reason that you fall in love with a person like that is because they're unavailable because they'll never get out of prison. That's not the idea. The idea is the fact that they murdered and admit that they killed is somehow attractive to someone. More attractive than you think. Now, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I'm not going to put a judgment on anyone. If someone chooses to love someone else and they choose it, that's the object of their fixation, well, that's their choice. I'd like to understand it a little better because there are so many women who are victims of very destructive men. You know, I mean, let's just think about it. Men are bigger. You know, they're bigger, they could be more destructive. If they get really bent out of shape, a woman can hardly get out of the way. So we want to talk about that today, the women who love destructive men, why they love destructive men, and what is a destructive man? Think about people like George Patton. You know, you've seen movies. There was a movie with George C. Scott predicting, showing you Patton's character, and you think about him, this stalwart kind of strong up there, but no remorse. Yep, primary emotion, no remorse. What do they do to a person when he goes to prison? When you go up before the parole board, the thing they ask you, it's kind of amazing. They say, does the person show any remorse? And, of course, convicted killers by now have learned the key phrase is show remorse. Because you have to get up before the parole board and you say, I'm really sorry for what I did. I can't imagine why I did it. I'll pay for this for the rest of my life in my heart. Knowing that I did this, that I killed somebody. This is a key phrase. So if you don't say it, you automatically don't get parole. If you do say it, there's a chance you might get parole. So remorse can be imitated. But true remorse, think about something you've done in your life, my friends. Think about something you did to some person in your life that you just wish you didn't do, especially when you were little. Can you think of something that you hurt somebody? I remember one woman who lived with a tremendous sense of remorse because once in grammar school, she snuck up behind a boy and she pulled his pants down. And she embarrassed him in front of everybody. But then that boy never came back to school. Something happened. You know, and she carried that around with her for years and years and years. Think about something that you may feel remorse over. Now, here's a funny thing. Part of the New Age, psychology is giving you a justification for everything. Well, you know, I may have done it and I may have been wrong, but, you know, I helped, yes, I shot my brother, but I helped him pass on to a better life. You know, we have things that we could kind of, excuses we could give ourselves. But try to connect with your remorse. Not in a maudlin way, but try to find something in your mind and in your heart that you really regret. If I were a woman dating a man for the first time, I would somehow get the subject around to asking this man to tell me something that he regrets that he once did. Now, you'll hear what people very often say is they'll reflect regret but not remorse. They'll say, I regret having made the decision to quit my job, you know, and become an artist. I regret, you know, and regret is one thing. Remorse is another. Remorse is I feel guilty. I feel bad for what I did. Do you ever choose a lover who was too frail and too easy and, you know, did you ever step out on somebody? Did you ever, you know, any number of things that you could have? Ever steal money? Do you ever regret taking money from your mother's purse? Did you take money from your mother's purse? Yeah. Oops, a lot of guilty faces. Did you regret it? No. Well, why did she? She didn't miss it. You know? Okay, well, what's the story about today, and what are we doing on this program today? Today we're talking about remorse. Today we are going to talk about the indomitable psychopath. Yes, the psychopath once again. The psychopath who comes up, who is so attractive to so many people. I was watching passing by a program the other day. There was a series on television called La Femme Nikita. And in this series on television, which was a TV series, there was a character called Michael, who is a clear psychopath, but he is charming, he's delightful, he is beautiful, he is kind, he is everything. But if need be, he'll turn around and he'll shoot you. In one scene, he makes believe in front of his wife that he's shot by somebody so he could disappear because he's a spy and he has a need to disappear. But also their little boy is watching. And so the little boy has now got to grow up without him. And but it is all done because this is all part of Michael's spy world. And Michael is one of the most loved characters in all of, and everywhere. Women just fall madly in love with him. Why do women love a psychopathic man? The psychopath, you know, is a predator. If we think about the interactions of predators with their prey in the animal kingdom, we come up with the idea of this kind of mask of the psychopath. Because the psychopath, just as an animal predator, he will adapt all kinds of stealthy functions in order to stalk his prey, cut them out of the herd, get an elaborate camouflage composed of words and appearances in order to assimilate his prey. The psychopath will take the most vulnerable of beings and attract them. You know, a classic is what people call, and I'm going to just use the phrase because it's what people call, what people think of as the dumb blonde, because I don't think there is such a thing. But what they mean by that is a person who tends to dye their hair so that they could attract somebody because they don't have any intelligence, and they usually wind up using their bodies to attract people. That is the most vulnerable person. If you think about their lives, and many of you I know will sit around and judge them and say, ah, how could that woman be like that? They are so vulnerable to the machinations of a psychopath because the psychopath reads the neediness and then goes after it. What does he do? You know, what does a psychopath really get from his victim? Well, it's easy to see that after they do all of this, they feel power. They generally don't eat their victims, but they do feel power after each conquest. It's a funny world we live in. We all want some kind of power. And we all are afraid of power, too. We dislike power. As if it's in someone else's hands, we don't want it. We don't want anybody else to have more power than us. Bottom line, you know, we would prefer. Nobody likes working for a boss, but sometimes you have to do it. You know, people like being the boss, though. Most people like being the boss. Some people don't like it because the responsibility could be overwhelming. Power is an aphrodisiac. Power makes you feel good on one level, and it attracts things to you in all of nature. The person with the biggest tail, right, has the most power, right? The peacock with the biggest tail and the biggest feathers, the longest horns, has the most power. That's who's going to get the person attracted to them. Power can come in many forms. Power comes in the form of money, possessions. Talent is power. You know, you ever watch somebody sing? If they sing naturally and they just, they're not performers, but they sing and you look at them and you, whew, don't you wish you had that power? How about fame? Fame is power in all forms, including the fame of a killer. Somebody who commits a murder becomes famous. Everybody gets their 15 minutes of fame. You know, that fame, that being known. What about the guy in the Numa Numa dance? Many of you have heard it by now. There's a guy sitting in the basement of his house. He makes a blog and he does a dance to a song, a Romanian song, I believe, called the Numa Numa Dance. And he's all over the world. Everybody sees him. He's in the New York Times. Power. He got propositions from so many women. He didn't want to take advantage of it either. He just wanted to stay in his basement of his house. Leave me alone. Physical strength is perceived as power. Muscle building. Why do you think guys pushed, you know, take steroids and then pump their bodies up to the point where, you know, they bulge at every part of their bodies except the significantly sexual ones because steroids tend to shrink your testicles, you know what I mean? So you're bulging in your shoulder and everywhere else, but those bulges, that power, the fact that a man could lift 400 pounds is attractive to some people, and that's a form of power. Intelligence. Intelligence. You could have the most broken body in the world, Stephen Hawking, you know, and people are so attracted to that power. Charm. Charm has a great power. If you can get along with people and you can be popular and you have a way of being with people, some people are very attracted to charm, because if you're charming and I am and you're attracted to me, I will be attracted to you, and by proxy, I will be popular. So charm is a form of power. Success, of course, in any field is a form of power. You think of the guy who started Microsoft, you know, or Apple Computer. I mean, not necessarily the most physically attractive people in the world, but certainly powerful. Violence is power. Violence, a person who could wield the biggest weapon and kill the most people, is a form of power, and people find it attractive. There are people who fall in love with anybody in a uniform. You know, uniforms represent power. It's such a funny thing. It could be any uniform. I don't know if sanitation department uniform works. But that's not a uniform. Those are clothing. You know, uniform meaning more military type. People are attracted to guns, knives, weapons. They're attracted to Tai Chi masters, karate. I mean, the whatever the belt color is that gets you. You know, you got a white belt, you got a brown belt, you got a black belt. All of that's your turn-on. Your PGA score could be a turn-on. You know, I shoot a 2 under par. You know, it could be attractive to somebody. Power. So we want to see what it is. If people are attracted to power, that's one reason why people are attracted to power. But the psychopath wields this power, and there are many different kinds of psychopaths. Let's talk about them. 4 different subtypes of psychopath. One is called the primary psychopath. They don't respond to punishment, apprehension, stress, or disapproval. They seem to be able to inhibit their antisocial impulses most of the time, not because of conscience, but because it suits their purpose at the time. Words do not have the same meaning for them as they do for the rest of us. In fact, it's unclear as to even grasp the meanings of their own words. It's like a semantic aphasia. They don't really care. They're aggressive. It's called the primary psychopath. They don't follow any life plan. It seems as they're incapable of experiencing any genuine emotion of any kind. Make good soldiers. Make good hired soldiers. You know, make good, militia for sale. Secondary psychopaths are risk takers, also more likely to be stress reactive, worriers. They tend to be guilt prone. They expose themselves to more stress than the average person. They're daring, they're adventurous, they're unconventional people who begin playing by their own rules early in life. They're strongly driven by a desire to escape and avoid pain, but they're unable to resist temptation. Now, both the primary, so you get the primary is kind of a physical type. The secondary is a kind of an intellectual type. They both can be subdivided into two categories, either the distempered psychopath or the charismatic psychopath. Now, mind you, we're talking about people who are destructive people, destructive men specifically, because 95% of these are men. 95, big percentage. Distempered psychopaths are the kind that seem to fly into a rage or frenzy more easily and more often than other subtypes. This is the kind of angry person who is angry and mean. They blow up, they explode, and they scare the hell out of you. Their frenzy will resemble an epileptic fit. They are usually men with incredibly strong sex drives, which we'll talk about, capable of astonishing feats of sexual energy, which get you now if you are attracted to somebody who's a mean, kind of scarred, motorcycle-driven, tattooed, you know, metallic earrings in every part of his body and vicious and carries guns, whips, and stuff like that and spits on people. His sexual capacity is enormous. If you're someone who is attracted to somebody who has kind of got a deadened sexuality, let's say you don't feel as much as other people feel. This, what they call the distempered psychopath, is a possible path to your sexual release, because this is the kind of guy who is going to give you a very rough time. And roughness could be very appealing to many people who are insensitive, meaning they can't feel much, especially if they don't feel much emotionally. You know, this is a masochist who would be attracted to the sadist, because the sadist is going to make you feel, even if he's going to make you feel agony, but at least you feel something. And their sexuality is so daring and adventurous, so intense, that they will drive you to orgasm where you may not be able to find it otherwise. So just try to think about it. You say to yourself, what's she doing on the back of his bike? You know, why is she attracted to this guy who looks like he's a homicidal maniac? You know, looks like, that's the appearance, right? It's exactly how he's putting it out there. And there's a big sexual satisfaction. In fact, many of the women who are attracted to men who are this way tend to wear rings, you know, clitoral rings, nipple rings, belly rings, things that you pull on to give more sensation, stuff that increases the sensation level unnaturally. The distempered psychopath has powerful cravings. They also you can characterize them by drug addiction. They love drugs. They eat a lot of drugs. They could use almost any drug. Kleptomania. Anything, pedophilia, they have no limits. They're illicit or illegal indulgence in just about anything. They like endorphin highs and rushes. They love risk-taking. The serial rapist, murderer known as the Boston Strangler, was that kind of person. It's at a point where you're just maniacally malicious. M&M's, maniacally malicious guys, are attractive to a lot of people. And please don't judge those people who are attracted to them. They're vulnerable. They're tender. They're looking to feel. And there may be more to it, which we're going to get to also. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I hope you're finding this interesting. I've done a lot of research on the psychopath. We have another program called The Psychopath, where we study the character in depth. But today I'm studying why a person would be attracted to, because on television, the James Bond character is so attractive to so many people. Why is James Bond so attractive? James Bond has no remorse. James Bond is likely to kill and not interrupt his sandwich. Nobody notices this. You know, they don't notice that, you know, he just shot somebody and he continued his cucumber sandwich with the edges cut off. You know what I mean? And he's very, you know, Roger Moore or whoever plays the character at the moment. It's just, they kill and feel nothing. Oliver North, if you watched his testimony, you would see very often, you know, he would sit there and they have great commitment. A psychopath has a tremendous commitment to things. They are convinced that they are right. But if necessary, and they weep, it's not that they don't weep, and they love like nobody else loves. They love with such control and such an, they could kind of possess with their love. You know, think of Taxi Driver. You know, the movie Taxi Driver, there's love for you. He was in love, right? So it's not that they don't love. It's that they don't feel remorse. No remorse. The other kind of psychopathic character is the charismatic psychopath. Now, these are the charming, attractive liars. They're usually gifted at some talent or other, and they use it to their advantage in manipulating people. They're fast talkers. They possess an almost demonic ability to persuade others out of everything they own, even their lives. You know the insurance salesman or the telephone, what telemarketers? When you look at something in a movie about a telemarketer or you watch a telemarketer, you will generally see that they consider the person they're calling a mark. And they say that one of the things they say is, you have my money, and I'm coming to get it. And when I convince you to part with your money and buy something I'm selling you, I don't feel guilty. I feel justified because it's my money. It's the best of the, not the best, but the most convincing telephone marketers are psychopathic ones. They don't care. They just want to get the money out of you. One psychopath I know was, he had actually gotten the members list of the Alzheimer's Foundation and called people one at a time telling them they forgot to send money and collected millions before he was caught by the police, before he was arrested. Charismatic psychopaths, they can talk you out of anything. They'll possess an almost, the leaders of religious sects, you know, or cults. You could see them up on stage swearing about, you know, the truth. They might be, they could lead their followers to their own deaths, and the people will follow. This subtype often comes to believe in its own fictions. They believe in what they begin to say. After a while, they begin buying it. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. We have a lot more to talk about. I want you to identify this because I tell you, friends, if you see it, you may want to avoid it, but you also know what you're dealing with. If you know you're dealing with a salesman who's a psychopath and you know he has no remorse, just guide yourself accordingly. Just guide yourself accordingly. They say that a lot of women in the sex trade are psychopathic, who sell their bodies or who sell, you know, just anything to get a dollar out of the customer. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue with this exploration of why women or why people are attracted to destructive men, and then we will take some of your calls, I hope. I'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Hi, this is Liz Wright, and you're listening to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
Moorish, Orthodox, Radio, Crusade, Anarchism for the Global City, Radical Environmentalism for the Concrete Jungle, Esoteric Explorations of the Secret History of Rebel Culture. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI, 99.5 FM.
Now, why do you think I chose that one? See, that's from the film Barry Lyndon with Ryan O'Neill. Fantastic portrayal. Franz Schubert, from Piano Trio in E-flat, Opus 100, the second movement. Ralph Holmes on violin, and Anthony Goldstone on piano. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We are talking about the psychopath. Ah, psychopath. Well, you see, tomorrow Roberto and I are going to talk about these words that start with P that you don't pronounce. You see, in Europe, if you go to Europe, they pronounce psychopath. They say psychologist. The P is so silent that they just purse their lips. And then, but I think we shouldn't pronounce it. Anyway, we're going to make a claim to it. You're going to learn something we do. That's on Wednesday. Roberta Atti and I, we're going to be talking to you about vulnerability, the nature of vulnerability, why some people are vulnerable and why others are not, which follows along with this program. And on Thursday, we're going to be doing something on the new feminine mind. Very interesting programming this week. Be sure to stick with us. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about people, men who are destructive men. And now we're going to talk about the people, the men who are, why women or why people are attracted to these psychopathic men. Some people feel that they have a need to save others. And perhaps a bit proud in their need to prove a point, they often fall prey to a destructive man because they refuse to believe the truth. There are some of them even will say to you, you know, some psychopaths will say, I'm a really destructive guy, you know, I really hurt people badly. And these saviors, these women who are saviors, tend to try to save the men. So they're going to be there, and they're going to be the saviors. And one of the appeals is to try to find somebody who is so severely screwed up and destructive that you're going to be the one who tames the beast. Now, what is that? Is that because that woman or person who is attracted to them is just some kind of an innocent child who's misled? No, because very often psychopathy, people attracted to psychopathy, which is a very sophisticated word of saying the psychopath, psychopathy, people who are attracted to it are in themselves in many ways desirous of being that way. Yes, remorse, guilt, it kills you. If you're somebody who grew up with a lot of shame and remorse and you were trapped by your own guilt, especially your sexual guilt, you hook on to somebody who's got none. And in a way, if you're associated with them, you lose your own guilt. Because they'll go out and they'll knock somebody off, hurt somebody, steal money, they'll feel justified, and you'll go along for the ride, and you get freed from your own guilt. Guilt is such a powerful tool for hurting a human mind. I'm not saying we shouldn't have it. We should have remorse. That's what makes us responsible for each other, you know, as part of the human family. But sometimes guilt is used destructively on children, and the children want to get even. So if you feel like you've been the victim of somebody's guilt invoking on you, trying to make you feel guilty, very often you'll get attached. You'll fall in love with somebody who is a killer, who is likely to destroy the very family that put all this guilt on you. And is nothing better in the world than going home with a biker with tattoos. You know, I mean, there's nothing nice. Nice mom is sitting at home. Come on over, bring your new boyfriend. I'll make some chicken soup. And boom, you show up with somebody who's got spikes hanging out of his ears. Not that there's anything wrong with spikes hanging out of your ears, but boy, it is revenge. It is so sweet because he, if he doesn't like, you know, the soup, he's going to say, I'm not going to eat it. He's going to be clear. He's not going to be guilted into anything. So one appeal is to be free of your own guilt. Another appeal is that you're a greater psychopath than the psychopath itself because you're going to whip it into shape. You're going to get him and you're going to corral the power. So very often a dominant woman will go to a dominant man and try to get this control over this guy in some way. And in some way, you're like Wonder Woman with her magic lasso. You know, you weaken the character once you embrace him. So sometimes it's an ultimate act of power to get related to somebody who's destructive, but it always backfires. I've never seen it not backfire because there is so much power in it. Some of the characteristics of somebody who is psychopathic is a glib and superficial charm, the tendency they have to be smooth, engaging, charming, slick, and verbally facile. Psychopathic charm is not in the least shy, self-conscious, or afraid to say anything. A psychopath never gets tongue-tied. They have freed themselves from the social conventions about taking turns in talking, for example. They'll jump right in. They'll interrupt you while you're talking. Grandiose self-worth. They are grossly inflated view of their abilities and their self-worth. They're self-assured, opinionated, cocky, brag a lot. Psychopaths are arrogant people who believe they are superior human beings. And they really believe they're superior. They have a need for stimulation, and they're prone to boredom. An excessive need for novel, thrilling, and exciting stimulation, taking chances and doing things that are risky. Psychopaths have a low discipline in carrying tasks through to completion because they get bored too easily. You see? So they've always got to get some kind of problem going, some kind of new dynamic. Challenge after challenge after challenge. Lying. Lying can be moderate or high. In moderate form, they'll be shrewd, crafty, cunning, sly, and clever. In extreme form, they'll be deceptive, deceitful, underhanded, unscrupulous, dishonest, salespeople, lawyers, easily, you know, I mean, physicians can be psychopathic, caring about nothing. People in position where you just hope that they have some sense of caring. Well, they care, but they only care so much. There's no remorse there. Remorse is very important. They're manipulative and cunning, and they can easily con people. They don't have this remorse. You know, it's a lack of feelings of concern for the losses, pains, and suffering of their victims. They just don't have it. They have shallow affect, their emotional poverty, or limited range of depth of feelings, although one thing you'll frequently see with a psychopathic person is that they'll attach themselves to some sense of justice, and then in the name of that justice, they'll show tremendous emotion like rage or deep pain. And I must say, my friends, I have met many a psychopath who has been involved in the peace movement. You know, they can be ready to kill in the name of peace. They have a kind of parasitic lifestyle. They have an intentional, manipulative, selfish, and exploitive financial dependency on others very often. And, you know, they just don't want to pay the dues to get what's there. So very often they will be parasitic, they'll be callous. And then promiscuous sexual behaviors, a variety of brief, superficial relationships, and this incredible activity, rageful kind of activity, which is very attractive to some people. Always in the history you'll find there were early behavioral problems as teenagers or children. You kind of see it right at the beginning. I sit outside a library where I like to read, and outside this library, I tend to go there at one particular time of the week, and I'm watching people pass by outside, and there's this one blonde boy who seems to pass by just whenever I'm there, and whenever I'm there, I watch him tear up something. He is somebody who passes by and hurts something always, and I keep watching him pass. And he passes and he'll take, like one time they were celebrating the 4th of July and there were flags around. And he took the flag and he buried it in the ground. Now maybe you would think it was a political protest, but no. Another time he was by, he was following a worm on the ground so he could crush it. It might have been a caterpillar. Another time he was there and he saw a plant and he just decided to rip the plant out of the roots. Trouble kid. You know, poor boy. It's not Dennis the Menace. I mean, Dennis the Menace had a good heart. It's Dennis the real Menace. What's he going to be like when he grows up? And usually they get in some kind of trouble. Vandalism, bullying, sexual stuff get them in trouble. Rapists, you know. Lack of realistic long-term goals. They're almost always, remember, they don't necessarily want to pay the dues to get where they need to go. Impulsivity, the occurrence of behaviors that are unpremeditated. They just foolhardy, rash, unpredictable, erratic, and reckless things frequently. But then there's the other kind. There's the kind who can go to school and be very swift and very cunning and very calculating and charm their teachers and get the highest grades. You know, there's that other kind, too. Sometimes you see a sense of irresponsibility. Repeated failure to fulfill and honor obligations and commitments, such as they don't pay bills on time, or they don't pay bills at all. They default on loans. Perform, you know, contractors. Not that contractors are psychopaths, but maybe. Do you ever get a contractor who gives you a job and you give them the deposit and they show up for the first day of work and then, boom, they're gone for the next 10 weeks. And it probably after, you know, 24 years, they complete the job that should have been done in a month because they take the money and they know what you go through. When you are contracting with them and you're picking the contractors, they know in advance. that they are not going to honor this contract on time. They know it in advance. The contractor's job is to sell you on the idea that you believe it's going to take place. Not all contractors, of course, but many. So the psychopathic contractor is just hooking up the jobs. I'll hook up the job. I'll send my boys over. Oh, yes, you know, the dog ate the homework. The truck broke down. Yes, we had the unit, but the unit was faulty, so we sent it back. These kind of excuses over and over again. They have many short-term relationships, especially marital relationships. Married 2, 3, 4 times. Perk your ears up when you hear that. A very good thing to do is to ask somebody who's married frequently, so what went wrong in each relationship? And you'll hear them blame the mate. And see if you find a consistent theme. Try not to challenge it. Because if you're somebody who tends to be attracted to destructive men, don't challenge them. Let them give you the information because they're very facile. The minute they catch that you're getting on to them, they're going to dance around and change their stories. So listen, my friends, listen, and then get prepared to duck. There's a kind of a criminal versatility, too. There's many criminal offenses, regardless of the person has been arrested or convicted for them. A lot of people just take great pride in getting away with crimes. They just take great pride. It's like the idea. So people attracted to that. There's one called the histrionic women who are particularly attracted and vulnerable to these kind of destructive men. And they are the kind of person who is likely to be enamored. These are very, very high-strung people. And they're high-strung, and they're so high-strung that they're attracted to the power of the destructive man. And the destructive man is going to control them. He's going to hold them in place. He's going to saddle them. He's going to bind them up. He's going to tie them up and say, don't move, because I told you not to move. And finally, they're going to be stopped. So that's one. Borderline women are also very often the victims of and attracted to psychopathic men. And they are immune because, you know, a histrionic woman who is a woman who is on the edge of her nervousness all the time, they're immune to developing healthy suspicion because they're always looking to have their needs fed. So they only see people as those people feed their needs. And, of course, a psychopath is so good at feeding needs. By the way, if you just tuned in, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Yes, we're talking positive. I want you to learn things about yourself and learn things about other people. The program is called The Positive Mind. We teach psychology here, you know, 3 times a week, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. If you want a copy of today's program to send to your daughter, it's 212-757-4488, 212-757-4488. The real danger about this kind of people is that some women in particular actually have a psychological predisposition towards forming attachment to these guys. Otherwise, none of them would mate. Otherwise, they wouldn't have babies. You know what I mean? So it's like the meaner the guy is, the more. In nature, you know, there's this theory about the strongest animal. The most extreme type of fascination when a woman falls in love with a man who admits that he's a murderer, admits it. Think about it. To kill is a huge thing on the unconscious level. And here we better not forget the woman's primitive instincts. Even when we live in a civilized society, the primitive woman has to mate the biggest and strongest male in the crowd. The idea is, give me the biggest and the strongest because that's what nature tells me to do. The one who can kill is above the law, above the society, above the moral, and above his own weaknesses. So to many people who are just reacting, it is it's a natural instinct. The innocent is another one who's a natural victim. Very often the person who falls for a strong murderer is another type of person who falls for the innocent convicted man. You know, they believe that that on some level, no matter what he's done, even if he's admitted the crime, he's innocent. And so they are attracted to the fact that he's persecuted. So that's another. The everything will be all right kind of guy is a woman in a relationship with a functional psychopath because her mother was married to one. You see, if your mother is married to a guy who doesn't care, very often he didn't have any boundaries. He took whatever he wanted, including with you. You see, as a child. So you look at maleness, or you look at parenting, you look at fatherhood as being the person without a feeling, without any remorse. He's so strong, yeah, you can get blood out of a stone. And that becomes your idea of what a man is. He beats her. If her father was a beater, you know, and just like somebody beat her mother. You know, the woman walks from one abusive man to another frequently. Every fifth single mother has or has had a relationship with a psychopathic, destructive man. Every fifth single mother. In an American study, they found psychopathic behavior is in 1 out of 20 men, but only 1 out of 100 women, you know. Hey, so we know. We know that there's a certain amount of charm. We know that if you're vulnerable and if you're scared and you're dying to be related to somebody and somebody comes along who promises to take you for whatever way and going to take you on a ride, you know, offers you some drugs and says, let's go along this path, very, very likely you're going to go there. It's very likely. It's just easy to just say, I think this is going to be the trip for me. And so it happens. And then it happens again, and then it happens again, and then it happens again. The trouble is, eventually, you find yourself the victim so often that you have to ask yourself, what is it in me that needs to be getting filled? And that's, my friends, where you go for the psychotherapy or the counseling, or you try to find out, what is it in me that needs to have this? What is my motive? What's going on inside of me? Not keep blaming the guys over and over again and say, men are such things, you know? You can't keep blaming them if it's you who keeps stepping into the web. You who searches it out and finds it. You know, if the likely place we're going to go meet somebody is at a bar where everybody is raucous, there is something about who you're going to meet, you know, that is going to bring suspicion where you ask yourself, what is it about me? What is it that I'm trying to do? Because when you begin changing the way you look at things, the things you look at literally change. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I thought we would take calls today, maybe tomorrow. There's so much information here that it's well, this feeds the many of you who have written to me. We have a website called thepositivemind.com. And in the website, you know, there's also an email address. And about the most frequent email address I get is women who don't understand what happens to them in relationships with men. It's the most frequent letter that I get. And so I put those all together and try to serve those today. Tomorrow we're going to look at vulnerability. And we're going to look at of what it is in nature. I'm asking Roberta Atti to kind of come up with the research to see how is that natural to be vulnerable, and what does it mean to be vulnerable in nature? We keep wanting men to be vulnerable, and we're asking them, you know, please bare your soul, show your emotion, show your heart. How natural is that? You know, and if it is not natural, what are we doing? You know, but then why are women vulnerable? Is that natural? Well, no, you're going to find that in nature it's not that natural either. So it's a real question. We're going to address that. And, of course, on Thursday, the new feminine brain, that's the Mona Lisa, is the author. But it's good stuff, I hear. So we'll be back with you on tomorrow, my friends. Again, a copy of today's program, 212-757-4444. 888.
Thursday, August 11th, 6:30 p.m. at the Community Church, 40 East, 35th Street in Manhattan. Welcome back those who defy U.S. policy and bring humanitarian aid to Cuba. For over 45 years, there has been an inhumane blockade on Cuba imposing hardship and suffering on the Cuban people. Come and hear the People's Report on Cuba. Welcome those who return from bringing humanitarian relief. Thursday, August 11th at 6:30 p.m., Community Church, 40 East, 35th Street in Manhattan. It will end with a candlelight vigil. For more information, please call 212-926-5757. That is 212-926-5757.
¿Quién como tú adivina mis antojos? ¿Quién me alegrará los ojos? ¿Quién será que sea así?
And you are tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, since I am acting as line producer today. I'll have to get things organized before 2 o'clock, and so I'll put on a little bit of music so I can find out what is going to take place at 2 o'clock on the Arts Magazine. Do stay tuned.
remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.